Good evening. This is Bob Hope. You see this piece of white shiny metal about the size of, say, a package of cigarettes? You see this piece in my other hand about the same size? Together they weigh, oh, a few pounds. Both are hunks of uranium. Now I take one and gently I tap it against the other. Now hold onto your seats. That's an atomic explosion. Just like the one that blew up Hiroshima. Two pieces of ore and you bang them together and you can destroy a city. Why? What has man done to these two pieces of metal?
The quick and the dead. The NBC News and Special Events Department and 167 affiliated stations present the first of four transcribed documents for ear on the atomic bomb and the new hydrogen bomb. Once again, Bob Hope.
Now you're probably leaning back and saying to yourself, what on earth is Hope doing talking about atomic energy? What does he know about physics? And you'd be right. I didn't even know what fission meant. Don't let that last word scare you. Fission is simply atom language for explosive. Or that an atom is so small that there are over a billion of them in every drop of water. That is until 3 weeks ago. I happened to look at my income tax form and I realized that I was a very big taxpayer and I knew that an awful big part of that tax was going toward atomic energy plants, of which I knew less than nothing. So one day I figured as long as I'm financing this project, I ought to kind of check up on things. So when I was in New York, I was sitting around chatting with some of the boys in the newsroom, and then we got around to the atom. I told the boys I felt like a rube not knowing more about the subject and asked them to give me a quick once-over.
This is Bob Trout in the newsroom. Let me tell you about Mr. Hope and how he became NBC's unofficial atomic expert. At first, we thought Hope was kidding when he said he wanted to get a little tutoring on atomic energy. And we told him to go see some scientists, like Einstein, or Oppenheimer, or Compton.
No, that's not the kind of guy for me to talk to. I wouldn't know what they were talking about. I need a guy that talks atom like Bill Coram or Red Smith writes baseball.
Then, Bob, the man for you to see is Lawrence.
Who?
Bill Lawrence of the New York Times. He's their science reporter, a two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, and the only reporter allowed backstage at the building of the bomb. You go see Lawrence and tell him the boys in the newsroom sent you over.
So what was I going to do? I'd ask for advice, so I had to at least make some kind of a gesture toward following it. I called Lawrence, and he told me to stop by for a drink. I walked east to his apartment on 72nd Street down by the river, climbed the four floors to his apartment, and knocked.
Come in, Mr. Hope.
I was a little surprised. He certainly didn't look like a hot reporter or my idea of a Pulitzer Prize winner. He was medium height, about 55 or so, with a rather thoughtful face and a slight accent. A little European and a little Harvard, I learned later. He sat me down by a window, asked me quite a few questions about Hollywood and Bing Crosby. Then this guy told me the darndest detective story I ever heard. I got so much out of it, I thought I'd like to share Bill Lawrence's story with you.
It wasn't really my story. It was man's story. And perhaps the biggest news story of the 20th century. I was privileged to be tapped on the shoulder by the Army and given the assignment that every newspaper man dreams of.
Mr. Lawrence, we want you to work for us for a few months. It'll be on a highly secret, and it'll be a very important program.
The general was Leslie R. Groves of the Corps of Engineers.
We can't tell you where you're going. All we can say is that you come to Washington and start to work. It's an important story. Maybe. It's a story that we only want one man working on, and you're the man.
Well, needless to say, Bill, you accepted General Groves' offer. Before you go into the business of how they discovered, then made the bomb, I wondered if you would mind going right to the last chapter of the story first and telling me about the first atomic bomb you ever saw go off.
The first atomic blast I ever saw was the first one that man had ever seen. On July 16, 1945, a caravan of scientists in buses and trucks moved along Route 380 in the New Mexico desert through sleepy little towns like Los Lunas, Belen, and Bernardo into the Sierra Oscura mountain range. There, near an abandoned reservoir at Alamogordo, the titanic labors of our scientists were to be tested. A voice rang out somewhere in the black darkness and filled the night. It was almost 5:30 in the morning. A cold drizzle had been falling since midnight. And there was talk that the test might even be called off. And a tower 20 miles away from me, the first atomic bomb waited in its cradle, a $2 billion baby waiting to be born. 5 miles away from the tower that held the bomb, Professor Robert Oppenheimer gave the signal that in a few seconds would set in operation the delicate mechanisms that would release the greatest burst of energy ever before released on Earth. No buttons would be pushed, no switches thrown. A series of robots were already in motion. The drizzle grew harder. A desert coyote howled in the distance for the last time. And just at that second arose from the bowels of the earth a light not of this world. The light of many suns in one. Don't be upset to hear no sound. We are 20 miles away, and the sound travels much slower than light. It will be 100 seconds till we hear it. It was a sunrise such as the world had never seen. A great green super sun, climbing in a fraction of a second to a height of 8,000 feet. And then a great cloud rose from the ground and followed the trail of the bright new sun. An enormous cloud in the form of a mushroom, much taller than Mount Everest. I glanced at my watch. The 100 seconds were almost up. The sound of the explosion finally caught up with it. Out of the great silence came a mighty thunder. It was the blast of thousands of blockbusters going off simultaneously at one pinpoint. The thunder reverberated all through the desert and bounced back and forth from the Sierra Oscura Mountains. The earth trembled beneath our feet like an earthquake. And as I listened to this great thunder trying to escape from the trap between the mountain ranges, I found myself asking again and again, what has man done to these two pieces of uranium? And how did it happen that this secret had been given to us and not to our enemy?
Und wenn ich jetzt spreche, dieses deutsche Volk bin, dann weiß ich in dieser Sekunde den Fall für...
My thoughts went back to 1939. Another man-made cloud had descended on Europe. Adolf Hitler had already swallowed up Austria and Czechoslovakia and had his lightning poised towards Poland. In Italy, Benito Mussolini was too drunk with power to realize what great wealth he lost when he let Dr. Fermi get away from him.
My name is Enrico Fermi. In 1938, I was given the Nobel Award for my work with neutrons and the atom. I had watched Mussolini lead my nation toward fascism and war. And like Maestro Toscanini and others, I knew I had to get out. When I went to Sweden for the award, my family and I left Italy for good.
Dr. Fermi had only been in America a few short weeks when he realized that nothing was being done in the United States about an atomic bomb, and he went to Washington.
In 1939, I asked for an appointment with the Navy Department. I told them that there was reason to believe that an atomic bomb could be built, and that one atom bomb could do the damage of hundreds or thousands of TNT bombs. They listened to me and told me they would think about it. I did not hear from them again.
Now, wait a minute, Bill. Hold everything. What's a neutron? Fermi was given a Nobel Prize for his work with neutrons. What exactly had Fermi done that was so great?
Well, here we have to get into physics for a second, Bob. Let's make it a rule. I'll never give you more than 60 seconds of physics at a time. How's that?
That's a deal. All right, Bill, what's a neutron and what did Fermi do to it?
First, let's take an atom. Everything on Earth is made of atoms. And an atom is the smallest part of any element. You can't make them, and no man had ever been able to destroy them. In one drop of water, Bob, there are 1 billion atoms.
Say that again.
One drop of water, there are 1 billion atoms.
That's what I was afraid you said. Then a dime must have 5 billion atoms in it.
Bob, a dime is made up of more than 2 million billion billion atoms.
Well, then what's a neutron?
Don't get ahead of me. Every atom has a nucleus, a hard center, so to speak.
Oh, and I suppose the nucleus is about one-third the size of the tiny atom.
Bob, the nucleus is 1/100,000th the size of the atom. And inside that nucleus is what we call the neutron.
At last. And what does the neutron do for a living?
No one knew it did anything until an Englishman named Chadwick discovered it in 1932. And then Dr. Fermi discovered that these tiny neutrons within the nucleus of the infinitesimal atom were actually bullets that could be fired out to split other atoms.
Uh-oh. Minute's up. Let's move on.
All right, Bob. A deal is a deal. Let's go on with the story. Our next key witness is a woman, a German woman.
My name is Lise Meitner. It wasn't easy to leave Germany at my age. Nor was it easy to leave my experiments at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute.
If you were to see Lise Meitner on the streets of Berlin in the late 30s, you would have observed a rather plain woman in her early 60s. If she appeared a little preoccupied and absent-minded, it was because this woman was on the verge of opening the door to one of nature's most guarded secrets. In 1938, the Gestapo forced her out of a laboratory and out of Germany because she was a non-Aryan.
As my train crossed the border and thundered across the flat Holland marshes toward my refuge in Denmark, my mind kept going back to certain recent tests that I had been making with uranium ore. I had been bombarding uranium with neutrons, and to my amazement was getting barium out of it. It seemed impossible. At first, I thought I had used mixing vessels which had been used previously for barium. I got clean ones and started again. Still, I was getting barium out of uranium. Why? Then suddenly a strange thought struck me. Uranium has 92 protons. Barium has 56. The difference is 36. What has 36 protons? Krypton has 36. Could it be that I was getting krypton along with my barium? I could scarcely wait to check this when I arrived in Denmark. If it was so, it could mean but one thing. Without knowing it, I had been splitting uranium atoms. Could such a thing be possible?
The fact that Lise Meitner had gotten barium out of uranium wasn't important in itself. The important thing was that she had taken the tightly clenched atom holding itself together from the time the world began and in gently forcing nature's hand open. This woman had unleashed an energy equal to 200 million volts. All from one single atom of uranium.
Oh, that's a wonderful story, Bill. Well, in as early as 1939, we knew how to build a bomb.
No, Bob. Far from it.
Well, what was the hitch then? You said Meitner split the atom. I thought that...
Yes. But Lisa Meitner split only one atom at a time. Just like getting one spark at a time. That hardly equals a fire. How do you build a fire at home, Bob?
With a match.
That's right. And what starts it all?
A spark, I guess.
Exactly. But the spark is only the beginning. It has to start a series of other little fires, And they, in turn, start a series of still other little fires.
Mm-hmm. You call that a chain reaction, don't you?
Right. Well, Robert, one split atom is just one solitary spark. Lisa Meitner had given us that spark. Now, the scientists of the world set to work to find a way to keep that spark alive by having it start a series of chain reactions.
To those of us who had fled from Europe, it appeared almost certain that Hitler's scientists knew as much as we did.